But in chapter 8, in the end of chapter 8, verse 33, it tells us that Moses said to Aaron and his sons, "Boil the flesh at the door of the tabernacle of the meeting, and eat it there with the bread that is in the basket of the consecration offerings, as I commanded, saying, Aaron and his sons shall eat it. What remains of the flesh and of the bread you shall burn with fire." We are at the place where they are consecrating the priests for the work of the ministry, for the sacrificial offerings. That's what we looked at in Leviticus chapter 8 last week. We'll look at more of that in chapter 9. But I wanted to come back to these verses because this whole concept of the priest eating the offerings, you know, to begin this process of consecration, after washing and clothing and the blood atonement, they would eat the offering. And the eating speaks of a continual relationship that the priest would have with the Lord. And Spurgeon said this. He said, "Let not this distinction be forgotten. The eating of the sacrifice is not intended to give life, for no dead man can eat, but to sustain the life which is there already. A believing look at Christ makes you live, but a spiritual life must be fed and sustained." Eating is a really good picture of our relationship with the Lord and how we need to continue in our relationship with the Lord. You know, eating is personal, right? No one can eat for you. And no one can have a relationship with the Lord on your behalf. It's got to be your own personal relationship with the Lord. And eating is an inward thing. The food goes inside you. It doesn't do you any good to have food around you. In fact, if you like the smell of the food, it does you really no good because you just get hungry. We had a big thing here Saturday, as most of you know, some of you were here. And we had all these desserts left over from Harvest America thing. And whenever there's desserts left over, they get put in our kitchen upstairs. And I don't do well with desserts. I'm not supposed to have them because I got, you know, blood sugar issues. And there's this thing that Marge makes called Death by Chocolate. Well, let's just say it almost killed me this week. It almost worked. But you can, you know, it would do no good to take food and rub it on your body or to just kind of have it around you. You have to take it in for it to do you any good or bad, depending on the food, of course. And eating is also something that's an active thing. You have to partake in it. You know, like if you receive a medicine, you might get that passively, but you can't passively eat. You know, you might eat when you shouldn't eat. You might eat spontaneously, but you can't really passively eat. You have to actually be active and do it yourself. And the same is true in our relationship with the Lord. It's personal, it's inward, it's an active thing. And it also, eating arises out of a sense of need and produces a sense of satisfaction. You know, you get hungry, and then you have a nice meal, and you go, and then you sit back, you loosen your buckle, you fall asleep. You know how that goes. But when you have a healthy relationship with the Lord, you know, you'll sense your need for him and then you'll seek him and you'll receive satisfaction from that. And so it's a great picture for us. So I wanted to go back to that before we started chapter 9 because we didn't really get a chance to cover that as much in depth as I would have liked to. So we come to chapter 9. Now the book of Leviticus, I want to remind you, is all about approaching God in holiness. God is wanting his people to be set apart for himself. And we've seen that God has established an order of the sacrificial system for the people, the children of Israel, so that they could approach him and be cleansed from their sins, so that they could have an atonement. And remember, all of that is a type of the reality of the Savior. When we look at the book of Leviticus, and you see all these sacrifices, and you see all these ceremonial things, it's all pointing to Christ and to the finished work of what he did for us. And in order for a sacrificial system to work, God then is establishing this priesthood that we've talked about through Moses' brother Aaron and his sons, who are of the tribe of Levi, we know. And we left off sort of in the middle of this section, beginning of chapter 9. Chapter 8 and 9 deal with this consecration of the priests and the activity of it. And in the end of chapter 8, it says that final verse that they did all things that were commanded them. And that's the best way to receive God's blessing, to do all things that are commanded us. Now, as we come to chapter 9, we're going to see that this issue of commandment is a theme of chapter 9. That following through with the commandments and doing what God says, the way God says to do it, is an essential thing for their worship. So it says in verse 1, it came to pass on the eighth day that Moses called Aaron and his sons and the elders of Israel. Now this is to be done on the eighth day during this celebration. They had 7 days in which they would be consecrated. The priests, the Levites, these sons of Aaron would stay at the tabernacle of the meeting. They were staying there for 7 days, camping there, if you will. And then that would, at that eighth day, this final consecration would take place. And the people have come. They're there. There's been sacrifices offered all week. Moses has been doing the sacrificing. They spent 7 days there. And by the way, the number 7 is significant here. You know, it's the number of completion. 7 days in a week, of course. 7 colors in the rainbow. 7 scales on the note. 7 notes on the scale, I should say. Yeah, scales on the notes. You know what I mean. I'm real musical, right? And so 7 is that number and represents their total consecration, you know, the completion of their consecration. And then on that eighth day, as they finalize this consecration, it represents a new beginning. 8 is the number of meaning of new beginnings. And we start a new week, if you will, on the eighth day. And so verse 2, he said to Aaron, take for yourselves a young bull as a sin offering and a ram as a burnt offering without blemish and offer them before the Lord. And to the children of Israel, you shall speak saying, take a kid of the goats as a sin offering and a calf and a lamb, both on the first year without blemish as a burnt offering. Also a bull and a ram as peace offerings to sacrifice before the Lord, and a grain offering mixed with oil, for today the Lord will appear to you. So we see all these different offerings, the sin offering, the grain offering, the burnt offering, the peace offering, each one of these offerings. And we've talked in depth, and if you missed those studies, you can go back and listen to them about what each of these offerings speak of. But the point that's so important here, Aaron will speak in a moment to the children of Israel, and it's quite a day that's going to start. And notice the final verse where it says there, the grain offering mixed with oil, for today the Lord will appear to you. And that's the whole thing that it's being set up here, that the presence of the Lord is going to come down to them on this day. And there are things that they needed to do to obey, to do what that was commanded. And God is going to be pleased with them. And in his pleasure, he will show up. And isn't it great when we come together, where 2 or 3 are gathered in his name? It says, surely he is in the midst. And when we gather and we worship and we come with a pure heart and there's a holiness in our own life, even in your own life in devotions, when you have been right with him, when you've done his commandments, when you've walked with him, when you've been obedient, you know how you sense that presence of the Lord so much more. Well, of course, here he is going to literally show up and they're going to do what he commands them. It says, then Moses said, this is the thing which the Lord commanded you to do, and the glory of the Lord will appear to you. And Moses said to Aaron, go to the altar, offer your sin offering and your burnt offering, and make atonement for yourself and for all the people, for the offering of the people, and make atonement for them as the Lord, notice again, commanded. Now, up until this point, Moses is the one who's been doing the offering. The sacrifices will now be turned over to Aaron and his sons. And the first offering that he's going to do is a sin offering, which would be the bull. And this speaks of incredibly of God's grace, because remember, this is the sin offering for Aaron himself. He's taking a bull as a sin offering for his sin. Now, if you remember what Aaron's major sin was, you might recall that when Moses was up on Mount Sinai, getting the Ten Commandments. Here Moses is meeting with God, getting ready to bring the Ten Commandments back down to the children of Israel. And the book of Exodus tells us the story that Moses and the people came and complained about not having any God to worship in the wilderness. And so Aaron helped the children of Israel, told them, go get your gold and your silver and bring it. And they all brought it and they built a golden calf. Isn't it interesting that God has him offer a bull, a calf, if you will? And, you know, it just speaks of the grace of God. Such a picture of how God gives second chances. Our God is a God of second chances, and third and fourth and fifth and sixth and whatever number you're on. He still wants to give you another chance. You know, he'll allow you to fall and do many things wrong, but he'll always want to draw you back. And he gives Aaron this opportunity. I'm sure Aaron was humbled by this when he considered how he didn't deserve this. You know, he didn't deserve this. But remember, that's what the offerings are all about, is that you can't approach God based on what you think you deserve. You can't approach God based on your works or thinking you're good enough. We never can. We have to come to God based on grace and based on his sacrifice. And so Aaron, therefore, went to the altar and killed the calf for the sin offering, which was for himself. And that would be done then by every high priest after Aaron, that they would come and they would all be sinners. Remember that. We talked about this last week. You know, there are no perfect people. You know, there's a lot of times we take people in ministry and we put them on a pedestal and we look at them and we think they're sinless. They're so holy. It's not true. It's a big lie. Every one of us are sinners. We all fall short. And Aaron needed the sacrifice just as much as the people did. Then the sons of Aaron brought the blood to him, and he dipped his finger in the blood and put it on the horns of the altar and poured the blood on the base of the altar. But the fat, the kidneys, and the fatty lobe from the liver of the sin offering, he burned on the altar as the Lord commanded Moses. Again, notice how often it says commanded. And the flesh and the hide he burned with fire outside the camp. He killed the burnt offering, and Aaron's sons presented him the blood, which he sprinkled all around on the altar. Then they presented the burnt offering to him with its pieces and head, and he burned them on the altar, and he washed the entrails and legs and burned them with the burnt offering on the altar. So we see that Aaron does exactly what he's commanded to do. And again, we went into detail on these burnt offerings and what it all means in the earlier studies. Then he brought the people's offering and took the goat, which was the sin offering for the people, and killed it and offered it for sin like the first one. And he brought the burnt offering and offered it according to the prescribed manner. Now, the prescribed manner would be, you know, they would do some of the offerings in the morning and some in the evening, every day, morning and evening, morning and evening, morning and evening. Just like our walk with the Lord needs to be, a consecration of our life. You know, we should rise in the morning to meet the Lord with our day and start our day with the Lord. And it's a great habit to end your day in the Lord, to say goodnight to the Lord, if you will. You know, because you don't know if you're going to wake up the next day. You might be saying goodnight and being with him, which would be great, right? For us, maybe not for the loved ones left behind. But, you know, we have that freedom and that opportunity to spend time with the Lord every day, every morning, every evening, and even throughout the day. And he brought the grain offering and took a handful of it and burned it on the altar beside the burnt offering in the morning, of the morning. And he also killed the bull and the ram as sacrifices of the peace offerings, which were for the people. And Aaron's sons presented to him the blood, which he sprinkled all around the altar, and the fat from the bull and the ram, the fatty tail, which what covers the entrails and the kidneys, and the fatty lobe attached to the liver. And they put the fat on the breasts, and he burned the fat on the altar and put the breasts and the right thigh. Aaron waved as a wave offering before the Lord, as Moses commanded, having obeyed. Then he begins to point to the Lord now, verse 22. And Aaron lifted his hand toward the people. And you can imagine that his hand was probably bloody at this point. You know, he's been handling the offerings. He's been dealing with this. And he lifts his hand toward the people and blessed them and came down from offering the sin offering, the burnt offering, and the peace offerings. Here, you know, he would have given them the blessing. And many believe that at this point he gives the traditional Jewish blessing. The Lord bless thee and keep thee and make his face to shine upon thee and give thee peace. And Moses and Aaron went up into the tabernacle of the meeting. And so we see this scene and, you know, you look at this and the only way that Aaron can come before the Lord is by the blood of the animal. The only way to enter in is through the blood. And that's the same way we come. And again, it's that type of looking forward to the blood of the Lamb who died on that cross and gave his life and shed his blood for you and I. And so they go in, though, into the tabernacle. They open the flap of the tent. Remember, the tabernacle is like a great big circus tent, sort of. And they go inside. And we don't know how long. This is interesting because it says, and they came out and blessed the people. We don't know how long they were inside. You know, I would have liked to know more detail on this, wouldn't you? Like, wouldn't you like to know, like, well, okay, what went on in there? We have a little hint coming in a little bit of maybe what went on, what conversation happened, but we don't know exactly. But they came out, and it doesn't say when they came out, but they did come out. And it says, and the glory of the Lord appeared to all the people. Incredible. The glory. Now, we don't know how this glory appeared. Was it the cloud of fire? The pillar of cloud, you know, that they see in the wilderness that came down from heaven. The pillar of fire that came at night. And it says, and the fire came out from before the Lord and consumed the burnt offering and the fat on the altar. When all the people saw it, they shouted and fell on their faces. You know, if we really ever see the true glory of the Lord, you know, when we see Jesus, you know, we see pictures of this in the scripture. When John saw Jesus in all his glory in the book of Revelation, what did he do? He fell down flat as a dead man. This is what's going on here. They're shouting out. They're, you know, are they crying out hallelujah? We don't know for sure, but they fell on their faces. And it says that God lit the fire, if you will. God's the one that consumed the offering. Did they shout even in a bit of fear, perhaps? You know, just startled, just freaked, you know? You see the glory of the Lord come. Great fire. Did it just sort of combust right there? Did it come down from heaven? Again, we don't know. But this same thing does happen a few other times in Scripture. In 2 Chronicles 7, when Solomon dedicated the temple, it says, and the fire came and consumed the offering. And same idea as here. When David offered an offering on the threshing floor of Ornan, he also had the fire from heaven come down. We know when Elijah offered the offering before the prophets of Baal, it says that God came and consumed that offering. You know, just an incredible scene of this fire consuming the offering. Now, understand something. This came, some think it came right, maybe it leapt from the altar right into there and consumed it, because it seems as though they didn't have the animals on the altar burning at this point, you know, and so God comes and just consumes the whole thing. And, you know, it's an interesting thing how they have to keep that fire burning, you know. All the time they've got to keep that fire. It's supposed to be an eternal fire. And we're going to see in a little bit that this fire is a very important fire. It's a very unique fire and important to go. You know, years ago I used to heat my house with wood heat in the house. And it was one of the best things, you know. You know how you love that being around a campfire thing? Well, when we heated our house that way, I loved the feel in the house and how warm it was all the time. And in the morning, I would just get up and have hot coals. And you just take another log or two and throw it on there, and they just burst right open in flames again and get that baby, open up the vents and get it blowing through and get some really nice hot fire going. It was really nice, sweet stuff. I didn't like having to chop the wood, but I liked the fire that it gave me, you know. But, you know, so I can relate to how these guys had to keep this fire going. But it came from the presence of the altar, the glory of the Lord appearing to all the people. They fall down, they worship. Now, this kind of thing didn't happen every day. Here, you can imagine that they are experiencing an incredible combination of joy and awe all at one time. That the moments like this where God shows up in such a powerful way, you know, we experience this kind of thing from time to time. Not quite, obviously, exactly this. But you know, when you sense the presence of the Lord, you're with the people of God. And you know, just you just sense it. You just know it. And it's so cool to be a part of.
God is truly blessed with his people right here. The people get blessed because they obey God. They get blessed by God because they obey God. And when you see those times of God moving, then you see all of a sudden these wrong motives and wrong situations come. And that's what chapter 10 begins to talk about. And it's really incredible when you think of this scene of what's happening. This is an incredibly holy moment. And it says that, verse 1, and Nadab and Abihu, the sons of Aaron, each took censers. Now, these censers would be like a metal pan with a lid on it. It was used to transport the coals. And they put fire in it and put incense on it and offered profane fire. The King James says strange fire. Other versions say unauthorized fire, profane fire, before the Lord, which he had not commanded them to do. Now, when we use the term profane, you know, we think of profanity, but profane, really, the word biblically really just means common fire. So common, strange, unauthorized. And we're going to see, again, we saw this in chapter 9. He said, as he commanded, and this is the key to the problem here with Nadab and Abihu. God did not tell them to do this. God includes very succinct instructions all the way through the book of Leviticus on how he wants them to perform these sacrifices, to have the fire, where the fire comes from and how it's to be used. And in other sections, it talks about how Aaron is the only one who's supposed to light this fire. And this chapter, when you think of this chapter in chapter 10 with Nadab and Abihu and what happens to them, we're going to see that God actually will end up consuming them. And it seems, in, you know, just on the surface, it might seem harsh to us. But God includes this in his word, I think, for some very important ministry lessons for us today. That it's sobering. That, you know, many times the things we learn and the lessons we learn from, let's face it, from bad things that happen. Hopefully they're bad things that happen to other people, right? We learn from the lessons of bad things from other people, not from ourselves necessarily, although you may have gone to the school of hard knocks and had to learn things the hard way. But here we see, and we hopefully can learn from their mistakes, these coals that these guys take are not from the right place. The coals were to be taken when any of the fire was to be burning from the bronze altar, from the place of sacrifice. They got these from some other place. We don't know where they got them from. But it says that it was strange fire or profane fire, unauthorized fire. It was not the fire of God. That's the point. You know, we need to realize this was not an innocent mistake by Nadab and Abihu. This was came from a secular place. They were wanting to add the common or the secular into the holy. One of the problems with taking strange fire from someplace other than where they were taking it from is that that place was not the place of sacrifice. Remember, the only way to holiness in our lives is the same way to salvation, and that is because of the sacrifice of Christ. We do not become holy upon ourselves, in ourselves. We are holy because he is holy. The holiness of God comes into our life and makes us holy from the inside out, and we have a desire to be sanctified and set apart for him because of what he has done for us, not because we can somehow make ourselves holy. And taking this strange fire, the brazen altar was that place of the sin offering, and it reminded everyone that man could only come based on sacrifice, that sin had to be addressed and confessed. Jesus said that anyone who tries to come in any other way is a thief and a robber. You know, the equivalent of Nadab and Abihu in the New Testament, you know, as we see, are those who would say that there's another way to approach God, in our day, I should say. Some other way to approach God other than by Jesus Christ, other than by the sacrifice of Christ. And we have to admit that there's a lot of people saying that today. Well, you know, if you're okay, if you're a good person, as long as you have faith. Well, wait a minute, have faith in what? You could have faith in Buddha. Does that save you? You could have faith in Muhammad. There's guys who have faith in Muhammad, and they're killing people in the name of Muhammad. So just having faith, you've got to have an object of your faith, and it needs to be the right object of your faith. It needs to be Jesus Christ. And people who are doing this today in some ways are even worse than Nadab and Abihu, because they're not just doing it to the type. Like in Nadab and Abihu, they're doing it to the type. The people who are doing it today are doing it to the real person, Jesus Christ. They're rejecting Christ who died for their sins. Paul in Galatians said, if anyone comes preaching any other gospel but the gospel which I have preached unto you, let him be anathema, let him be accursed. I don't ever want to be someone who preaches any other gospel but the gospel, the true gospel, the gospel of Jesus Christ, which is that Christ came and he died and he rose from the grave. And that's what we're saved by. We're not saved in any other way. There's no other way. You cannot gain salvation in any way. You cannot work your way. You cannot be good enough. The very definition of grace is unmerited favor, undeserved favor. There's not one thing we can do to add to it. And we need to always keep this in mind, that we do not approach God in our own way, but we approach God in his way. And here we see at a very, very important time in the nation of Israel, in this time of establishing the priests, God takes this example with Nadab and Abihu. And it tells us in verse 2, it says, so when fire went out from the Lord and devoured them, and they died before the Lord. Now this word that's used when fire came out and devoured or consumed them is the same that's used for the offering, when the offering was consumed. And Moses said to Aaron, this is what the Lord spoke, saying. So maybe this is what was said when they were in the tabernacle. By those who come near me, I must be regarded as holy, and before all the people, I must be glorified. So Aaron held his peace. Now, you got to imagine, these are his sons. Two sons of his just get completely consumed by the Lord. They're lying dead. They're charred. That's the scene. And Moses says, Aaron, and he's going to tell them not to grieve. He's going to tell them not to mourn and to wail later on. This is how serious God is about his holiness. Now, what was it that led these fellows? You think about the excitement that's going on, the wonder in the middle of this. And here Nadab and Abihu come running in, and God just consumes him. Imagine this scene and what's going on with the people when this took place. There must have been total silence at that point. You know, this crowd of people is there, and there must have just been this dead silence. They're seeing the consuming fire of the holiness of the Lord. The same consuming fire that led to atonement. Now understand this, this fire, this consuming fire, it led to atonement at the sacrifices. But the consuming fire is a fire of judgment also. See, we need not think, we need not be naive in somehow believing that God's judgment is not genuine and real. It is very real. And God will many times show his judgment, and he does so here. You think about what Aaron's feeling and going through, and it's difficult. You know, this is the only narrative we have in Leviticus, and the thing that Moses says to Aaron is that narrative, and then what God says to Aaron afterwards. Now, what was the strange fire? What was it that took place? There are places where it indicates, again, that Aaron alone was the one to take the fire. Did these sons of Aaron go where they didn't, you know, where it didn't belong? They brought it from some other place, something other than the altar. Again, it's not specific on where they got the fire from, but they knew they were doing wrong. And it's amazing that in this environment where God is moving, that someone can take to themselves that which God has not authorized them to do. And you know, sometimes this will happen, and I don't think it was necessarily recognizable at the moment when it took place. But really what they're doing is they're substituting the natural for the supernatural, and they're substituting their own invention for the commandment of God. And they're substituting religious practice. Listen, this is the one I think that our society falls into most. Substituting religious practice for devotion to God. You know, we can easily become a very religious people. But religion never saves a person. And we should never use man's ideas and man's religion, so to speak. And we see this all around within the church today. You know, you got new Bibles and new methods, and you know, you got to teach people certain ways, strange doctrines and pagan religions creeping into the church. And when you ask some of the people that are into this strange fire, and you say something to them, you say to them something like, well, where is that in the Bible? And they say, well, does everything need to be in the Bible? Yes, that's my answer. Yes, everything needs to be in the Bible. And sometimes, you know, they'll justify what they're doing by the fact of, well, it's working. We're getting people. It's exciting. There's a lot happening, you know. But that doesn't mean that's the Lord. You know, one man put it this way. He said, God protect us from clever men who give churches ideas and think that this will lead to something holy. I like that quote. The fire that God honors is a fire that comes from his altar. You know, you think about what happens when the word of God goes forth and it really touches your life. Think of the men on the road to Emmaus when they're walking with Jesus after he was risen from the dead. What did they say? They said, didn't our hearts burn within us as we walked along the road and he spoke of the prophets? It's like they knew, but they didn't know. And they were so excited by it. And we need to be very careful that we don't push things, that we stay far away from the places that we know would grieve him. For the fire that he desires to be burning is the fire that comes from his altar for us to serve Christ. The fire that came when he became our sacrifice, to walk in the Spirit. And if we're not in that place where we're walking in the Spirit, you know what we're going to do? We'll invent our own stuff. We'll find our own strange fire and we'll try and add it to God's ways. And it's a dangerous place to go. Putting our own inventions in the place of the commandments of God. God works by his grace and by his mercy. And sometimes we think we can play with God and invent new stuff and that somehow that's going to work. And then we're going to manipulate his glory. We're going to bring the glory of God down, you know. Doesn't work. Doesn't happen. This Nadab and Abihu, they took something upon themselves that they never should have taken. And here in the midst of this glorious moment comes the work of the flesh. And God says, I will have none of it. I will consume the work of the flesh right here and now. And you really wonder if God were consuming the work of the flesh all the time now. If God were consuming the work of the flesh, you know, what would happen? How many people would be dying all the time, you know? If every time the work of the flesh came forward. But here in the midst of this, we see this. And we see it in other places in scriptures. You know, in Joshua 7, after the victory of Jericho, Achan took some of the goods and he hid them and he buried them in his tent. You remember that story? And then what happens is God has to judge Achan and his entire family. And I think it was 250 of them die that day. It happened to David. David, who was a man after God's own heart, he had this desire to bring the Ark of the Covenant back to Jerusalem. He had the right heart about it, but he didn't do it the right way. So he took the Ark and he put it on a cart and he started wheeling it back to Jerusalem. And then the cart started to fall over and one of the brethren there, one of the servants, reached out and touched the Ark. His name was Uzzah. And it says that Uzzah died that day. David had to come before the Lord and repent and ask God, how is he supposed to do this? You see, doing the things of God in God's way. We don't do the things of God in our way. We do them in God's way. Happened in the book of Acts in the New Testament. Ananias and Sapphira, they come and the church is exploding during this time. There's great revival that's happening. People are coming to the Lord in the thousands. And Ananias and Sapphira, they see what someone else does. Barnabas, who gives all that he has for the work of the ministry. And they think, oh, that was a really cool thing he did. But let's do it a little differently. And they come and they represent themselves to giving all, but they don't give all. They give only a portion and they hold back some of it for themselves. And they come to Peter, and when Ananias shows up and tells Peter, Peter says, how much did you get for the land and for what you sold? And she says, thus and such. And Peter says, well, you're lying. You're not lying to man. You're not lying to man. You're lying to God. And he falls over dead. And his wife shows up a little while later, and she falls over dead. And he says, the same people who pulled your husband out of here are going to pull you out of here. And she falls over dead. Judgment comes upon the church. And it says great fear came upon the church in those days. And you can imagine that during this time, great fear started to fall upon them. And the fear of the Lord is a good thing. Each instance that I just mentioned, God is beginning something new, something fresh. And there are these occurrences that reveal his purity and his holiness. And God will have his way. Look again at verse 3. It says, by those who come near to me, I must be regarded as holy. And before all people, I must be glorified. And Aaron, it says, kept his peace. He knew. As grieving and brokenhearted as Aaron was, he knew. He knew his sons were wrong. He didn't argue with Moses. He didn't argue with God. He knew. He realized this was a holy moment, and my sons stepped in and, in a sense, ruined the moment. And that's what happens when we try to infuse the flesh into a holy moment, into a holy experience with God. And Moses called Mishael and Elzaphan, the sons of Uzziel, the uncle of Aaron, and said, come near, carry your brethren from before the sanctuary out of the camp, so that they come and carry these dead bodies out. So they went near and carried them by the tunics out of the camp, as Moses said. And Moses said to Aaron and to Eleazar and Ithamar, his sons. Now you imagine these two sons are a little nervous by this time. You know, you think about this. If you have older siblings and they've walked away from the Lord and you watch them do this, you know, you got to learn by that. And that's what these guys need to do. They need to learn some lessons by this. He tells them, do not uncover your heads nor tear your clothes, lest you die. I'm sure they heard that, lest you die. And wrath come upon all the people. But let your brethren, the whole house of Israel, bewail the mourning which the Lord has kindled. You shall not go out from the door of the tabernacle of meeting, lest you die, for the anointing oil of the Lord is upon you. And they did according to the word of Moses. And imagine they would, wouldn't you? The fear of the Lord comes upon you, man. You'll do anything. You know, it's interesting. When a crisis happens, when 9/11 happened, when the shooting took place up in Connecticut, all these times that these things happen, people will, for a moment, they're kind of like, oh no, this is it. This is the judgment of God. And there's a fear and there's something that comes upon them, but it doesn't last. We're going to see the children of Israel. It doesn't last with them either. The Lord spoke to Aaron. Now, this is interesting because this is the only time that God speaks to Aaron in the book of Leviticus directly. You know, think of it. Here he's coming to Aaron. And no one understands the heartbreak of a father who's lost a son like the Lord. Understand that. The sufferings of Christ are eternal. You know, it says that the Lamb was slain before the foundation of the world. So the Father has already experienced, if you will, the suffering of his Son, even though this is thousands of years before Christ dies. And no one understands it like a brokenhearted father. And here, Aaron is a brokenhearted father, and here comes Father God. And he comes and he says to him, do not drink wine or intoxicating drink, you nor your sons with you, when you go into the tabernacle of the meeting, lest you die. It shall be a statute forever throughout your generations. Now, isn't it interesting that he tells them not to drink wine? Perhaps Nadab and Abihu had drank wine or were drunk even perhaps when they did what they did, because what they did is not very explainable, is it? And if someone is drinking and out of hand with their drinking, they will do things that are not explainable. Now, we don't know that for sure, but there's certainly an inference here. Why would God tell them not to drink? And the thing is, you know, with alcohol, I don't want to get on too much of a hobby horse, but I am a preacher. So I'm going to preach a little bit here. Anyone who wants to go deeper with God, to be greatly used by God, alcohol cannot be a part of your life. I really believe that. You know, Ephesians says to be not drunk with wine, whereas into excess, but be filled with the Spirit, speaking to one another with psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing and making melody in your heart to the Lord. Be filled with the Spirit, not with wine. Don't be under the influence of the things of this world. And alcohol is a thing of this world. Don't be intoxicated with this world. And it blows my mind. You know, I know churches where they are gathering together in bars to have leadership meetings. And that just blows my mind. But that's where our culture has gone today. And the idea is to be constantly filled with the Spirit. Now, listen, I'm not a legalist. If you go out to dinner with your husband or your wife and you have a glass of wine at dinner, you know, and I run into you, you don't have to stand there and feel guilty. I actually had somebody tell me that their wife didn't come to church because of my position on alcohol and she likes to drink. I mean, my position on alcohol is this. I don't think it's wise. But if you're doing it and you're not getting drunk, there's no sin here. You know, that's not a sin. You can drink alcohol if you're not getting drunk. You drink a beer, you drink a glass of wine, whatever it is you drink. If you're not getting drunk, it's not sin. But could it be that it's hindering you from going deeper with God? Could it be? I believe it can. And I will say for those in leadership, in our ministry here, if you're in leadership, you are expected to not drink alcohol at all. And if you do, I would say you shouldn't be in leadership. Just step out. It's okay. And, you know, here we see these fellas, you know, God warns the priests. God warns those who are in spiritual leadership. Do not drink. And you got to think, what does alcohol add to us anyway? You know, there's $33 billion spent in alcohol every year in our country. And I've shared this with you before, but I used to do a prison ministry in Trenton State Penitentiary. And 45 hardened criminals that we used to do a Bible study with. These guys were murderers, rapists, whole gamut. And I asked the question one week, how many of you are here because of drugs or alcohol? How many of you did your crime while you were drinking or on drugs? Every single hand in that room went up. There's no good that comes from these things. And so I'll stop preaching. We'll go through the rest of the word. But I do love the fact that here, you know, God stoops down and talks to Aaron, to his son Aaron, about the death of his sons. He says that you may distinguish between holy and unholy, and between unclean and clean, and that you may teach the children of Israel all the statutes which the Lord has spoken to them by the hand of Moses. How could he teach them if he didn't live them, right? He wants them to walk the walk, not just talk the talk. He wants them to live the real life. And Moses spoke to Aaron and to Eleazar and Ithamar, his sons who were left. Take the grain offering that remains of the offerings made by fire to the Lord and eat it without leaven beside the altar, for it is most holy. You shall eat it in a holy place because it is your due and your sons' due of the sacrifices made by fire to the Lord. For so I have been commanded. The breast of the wave offering and the thigh of the heave offering you shall eat in a clean place, you, your sons, and your daughters, notice that with you, and they are your due, for they are your due and your sons' due, which are given from the sacrifices of the peace offerings of the children of Israel. And the thigh of the heave offering and the breast of the wave offering they shall bring with the offerings of fat made by fire to offer as a wave offering before the Lord, and it shall be yours and your sons with you, by a statute forever, as the Lord has commanded. And Moses made careful inquiry about the goat of the sin offering, and there it was, burned up. And he was angry with Eleazar and Ithamar, the sons of Aaron, who were left, saying, you know, Moses seems to have an issue with anger. We see he gets angry in another place here, but he, you know, he's concerned about the holiness of God here. And, you know, it seems as though Aaron's sons have a bad track record, right? So here he sees that Aaron's sons don't do the right thing with this offering, this final offering, the sin offering for the people, the goat sin offering. They're supposed to eat of that. They're supposed to partake in that, and they don't do that. And so he says, why have you not eaten the sin offering in a holy place, since it is most holy, and God has given it to you to bear the guilt of the congregation, to make atonement for them before the Lord? See, its blood was not brought inside the holy place. Indeed, you should have eaten it in the holy place as I commanded. And Aaron said to Moses, and this is a great answer that Aaron gives here. He says, look, this day they have offered the sin offering and their burnt offerings before the Lord, and such things have befallen me, speaking of his sons. And if I had eaten the sin offering today, would it have been accepted in the sight of the Lord? You know, in a sense, what Aaron is saying is, I've lost my sons here. I've lost my appetite. If I would have eaten this, I would be eating it as a hypocrite right now. And what good would that do? And so when he said this, when Moses heard that, he was content. So when we look at this, you know, make no mistake, we come to God as we are, but we cannot come to God in our own way. We have to come his way. And have to come the way that he has provided for us. And that way is the way of Jesus Christ.